All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Angela Davis, and this is NPR News. So glad you could join us today. It is Monday morning and the first week of a new year, and you may already be exhausted by the thought of all the things you said you were going to do differently in 2022. Okay, so let's take a minute, actually the whole hour, to talk about the psychology of sticking to goals. What's on your list of New Year's resolutions? Do you want to spend less, save more, eat healthier? Do you plan to get in better shape by moving your body more, read more books, stay in better touch with loved ones, relax more? Well, whatever kind of change you want to make, saying it out loud is the first step. Committing to getting it done is the second step. And the third step, well, that's the hardest step of all. Sticking to your goals so that you can reach them is difficult for everybody. But understanding the psychology of sticking to your goals will help you get there. So today we're talking with three guests about establishing and meeting our goals for 2022. And I definitely want to hear from you. We want you to call in. Have you achieved a New Year's resolution in the past? And I want to know how. What were the biggest obstacles? And what are your goals for 2022? Do you need some help creating a plan to meet them? Maybe we can help you. Give us a call at 651-227-6000. Again, it's 651-227-6000. Or you can call 800-242-2828. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Let me bring in my three guests. We have with us Teresa Nutt. Teresa is part of the graduate faculty for the University of Minnesota's Integrative Health and Well-Being Coaching Program. Welcome, Teresa.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. We also have on the line Ayelet Fishbach. Ayelet is a professor of behavioral science and marketing at the University of Chicago, the Booth School of Business, and also the author of Get It Done, Surprising Lessons from Science of Motivation. Hello, Ayelet. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Hi. And Chris Farrell is here with us. He's NPR's senior economics contributor, and he joins me every Monday at 9, as you know, as we take time to always talk about money and the economy. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Angela. And the first show of the new year?
Yes, it is. And we're kicking things off. You know, I know that not everybody makes New Year's resolutions, but there is something, I think, about the start of a new calendar year that can get you thinking about where you are in life and where you would like to be, a self-evaluation of sorts. And so that's why I wanted to talk about this today. And so, Teresa, I know that you have come up with 8 strategies for sticking to your goals. And let's start with the first one. The first strategy, you say, is to have a bigger vision or dream for your life. Expand on that for us. What does that mean?
Yeah, I would love to. So, you know, one of the things that really compels people after 19 years of working with people as a health coach is to really know, what's my life going to look like a year from now? How am I going to be thinking, feeling, behaving that's different and allows me new things in my life? And when we have that sort of compelling vision, it makes the actual walking through the sticking to it a whole lot easier.
Yeah, I feel like particularly during the pandemic, I've kind of lost my sense of time. You know, 2 months seems like a year. I mean, it's really become very blurry. Do you find that because of the conditions of living through the pandemic?
I think for sure it really has distorted not only time, but also space, because people's lives have become condensed into their home environment. And so everything's happening at home. And so there's a number of things distorting that. It's great insight.
So that bigger vision or dream for your life, you said we're already thinking about, where am I going to be a year from now? Because I've seen what has happened in the past year.
Right.
So we might need some change. What are your thoughts on this? Is making a resolution, is that the way to go? Or would it be better to set more, like, you know, abstract intentions?
Yes, absolutely. Setting a goal has been proven the best strategy to eventually reach that goal. We've been collecting data on New Year's resolutions for years now. Our last wave included 2,000 people who set resolutions. And those who set resolutions are more likely to follow through with their goals. Saying that only about a quarter of the people say that they still engage with their goal when we survey them in November. So, you know, 11 months after they set the resolution, and I can talk a bit about what's special about those people.
Yeah, well, I want to know now, like, what are they doing? How are they becoming successful?
Well, those are the few people that have the intuition that next year they are going to be very similar to the person that they are now, which sounds a bit intuitive, but not really. Most of us, when we set resolutions, we plan to do what's important for us next year. We say that next year, I mean, actually right now, this year, I'm going to put the fun aside and just do what's important for me. And this is a bit of denying our human's nature. We are going to do what's fun and what feels satisfying. And so the people that follow through with the resolutions are those that found resolutions or found a way to pursue the resolutions that they enjoy at the moment. So they may have found the healthy food that they like, the exercise that they find fun to do. No, they found a way to pursue their career or financial goals in a way that is gratifying at the moment. It's really that the people that tell us, I enjoy pursuing that, are the people that are still doing it a few months later.
And Chris, you know, the last year or two for a lot of people created a lot of financial distress. So I know a lot of people think about what can I do differently with my money in 2022.
Yes. And in ways to, you know, we all have those resolutions that we're going to do. We're going to save more. We're going to pay down that credit card debt. We're going to budget. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And listening to Teresa and Ayelet, you know, one of the things is, time is our scarce commodity, and we live really busy lives. And, you know, the good life these days is really busy. Your children don't only do their homework, but you're to be engaged with your children, and you're trying to exercise, and you need to talk to your partner, and you need to keep up on technology. Oh, by the way, and you're doing a job. So I think you need to take time into consideration. So one of the things, how to have a resolution with finances that you're going to stick to it, is automate it. So you need to increase your savings. Well, go to your checking account and, you know, you can do it online and you can have a small amount of money every month automatically withdrawn from your checking account into your savings account. Guess what, Angela? You have now created a habit that is automatic. You're saving more.
So just taking it like one step at a time and creating a system that'll help you to be successful in doing it.
That's right, because we are busy. And so these... A lot of what we're trying to do is create better habits. And so one way of creating a better habit when it comes to money is to try and automate it as much as possible.
Well, a lot of people feel, I think, that they really lost control of what happened to their money with, you know, what we saw during the pandemic the last 2 years with all of the changes to the economy and changes that, you know, hinged on what was going on with COVID, with new variants and the market responses. So, Chris, where could people start when it comes to thinking about money in 2022?
So where I would start is, first of all, be modest in your goals, but then think about where is your household most vulnerable? Is it that you're carrying too much credit card debt? Or are you hearing through the grapevine, your organization's grapevine, that layoffs are coming or there's going to be a restructuring? Or is it that your child is going to be going off to college and you know that this is going to, you know, this is going to be expensive and there's going to be a draw? Where is it that you're most vulnerable now that we're in 2022? And focus on that. And the other things, sort of put down the list. Yes, you're conscious of them. You're aware of them. But focus where your risk is greatest.
I want to let you know, we're talking about how to stick to your goals, the psychology of it. And we want to hear from you, our listeners. You can call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. And I want to know, what are your goals for 2022? And I want some advice, too. I want to know, have you achieved a New Year's resolution in the past? And if so, how did you do it? What were the biggest obstacles and what helped you stick to your goal as we talk with our guests? I want to read some of the comments we're getting on Twitter already. Jessica writes, Angela, yes, I have been successful when I've made small, specific, and realistic resolutions. For example, a few years ago, I wanted to declutter my apartment, and instead of spending a long, miserable day doing it and not finishing, I got rid of one thing for 31 days, and it felt great. Teresa, what do you think about that, the idea of taking these small steps toward a big goal?
Yeah, I love that because I think it's the perfect advice. It's sort of like small, consistent steps will get us there. And it's often right. We overwhelm ourselves. At least that's my experience. People will try to do it all at once. And as Jessica just said, then you sort of don't get there. But if you can do one thing a day consistently and keep moving yourself forward, it becomes enjoyable and you build momentum and confidence as you go. So that was really fun to hear that story of validation.
And Ayelet, what do you think about that, doing one thing for 31 days to get to her goal?
What I loved about the story is that it was clear that the person enjoys it at the moment, okay? That there was this immediate daily achievement that is gratifying, and feeling good about your day is really the trick. It's really what is missing for most resolutions. When you cannot feel good about your resolution, then I would go, and I really like the advice of setting defaults, of doing it in the background, of having it somehow done without you paying attention. But if you actually need to do something every day, then this is just a wonderful example of making it into a game, making it into something that excites you as you do it.
And Chris, this could be applied to like better financial stability too.
Oh, absolutely. And I was just thinking, you know, you get this sense of progress. So one of the pieces of advice that's out there for people who are carrying too much credit card debt, and it's really similar to what Jessica was saying, attack the credit card debt that's the smallest. Okay, you may have a couple credit cards that some have more, some have less. Attack the one that's smallest, because you know what happens, Angela? You make progress and you pay it off and you feel good. And then you feel like, hey, maybe I can keep going. Then you attack the one that has the next highest credit card debt. But it's that sense of accomplishment and that sense of progress that reinforces the good habit that you're trying to develop.
And Ayelet, are there things that people can do to help themselves, like some rituals or habits that they should establish that would just lead to, I guess, just feeling better about themselves in the new year?
So we think about habits as basically something that is created from doing something several times. And many things, when we do them for the first time, they don't feel very good. Okay, if you haven't been running for a while and your New Year resolution is to start running, I can guarantee that the first two, three, four rounds are going to feel not so pleasant in your body. And habit requires telling yourself, well, I am going to do this for maybe a few weeks without immediately feeling the benefit and hopefully create this habit, hopefully get to the stage where it just feels right to do it at this time of the day. And so habits are useful.
And Teresa, what would you say about habits and rituals to sort of support being successful in maintaining a goal?
Yeah, I think, you know, ritual is so important, and actually one of the I'm going to screw up his name, but the Atomic Habit book was big last year or the last couple of years. And one of the things he really talked about is ritual helps us tie what we're already doing, like brushing our teeth, to another new habit. So it becomes part of something we're already doing. And so I think this ritual, besides making it fun, which I think is a great addition, like making it enjoyable, we can also tie it to things we already do in our day so it doesn't feel so foreign. It becomes attached to something we're already really familiar and in the habit of doing.
So give me an example of that, like tying it to a ritual.
So, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, and back to, I use the word ritual very loosely, but maybe on someone's morning commute, they start listening to positive affirmations that propel them toward their goal. I have a client right now who's really listening to this certain 5-minute thing that helps her get in the mindset of what she's wanting to create in her life. And she does it while commuting. So she has to commute anyway, but the ritual is now she's using that time intentionally to set her mindset for what she wants to create in her life. So ritual can be used in big and small ways.
And Teresa, I know you've said that people should look at their environment and maybe revamp their environment to support sort of the desired lifestyle change. Like, what does that entail doing?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because I think our environment is so critical, and diet is an easy one. I use it because often we sort of, after the fun of the holiday season, that's the first thing we think about. Oh, I really need to change my diet. But really looking around and saying, you know, are there, I think of my parents' home where there's candy on the shelf and, you know, cookies in the closet. And it's like, are these things, if I'm stressed, am I going to reach for them? And even also our environment can be, do I need a quote in front of me that inspires me to keep going when it goes hard? So environment's a lot of things. I think it's our mindset. It's our physical environment. It's our mental environment. All of the things we can be doing to help support and nurture that place in us where we might get tempted to fall off course or make it tough for ourselves.
So, yeah, it's more than just like, OK, I come up with this idea. This is going to be my goal. And then maybe I write it down. Maybe I say it loud. But then you have to create sort of the support system, right, to make sure that you're more likely to be successful. Like, right, Chris?
Yes, I think this notion of community is so important. And one way that we stick to our goals is talk to your friends, talk to the people you know, talk to your colleagues at work and say, I'm going to get rid of my auto loan this year. That's what I'm really going to attack. Now, you've said it publicly and they know about it. They care about you. You're having some coffee. You're having a conversation. You're on Zoom and someone will say, well, how's that paying down that auto loan going? So it keeps you accountable. So I think, you know, You're thinking about what it is that I want to accomplish, but then tap into your community to reinforce what it is you want to do. And by the way, do the same thing for them. What is it that your friend wants to accomplish? Have them say it out loud, hold them accountable, and be in a supportive way. And I think that will help a lot of people really achieve their goals if they have the support of their community.
We're talking about the psychology of sticking to our goals. And I want to hear from our listeners as we talk with three guests about this. Have you achieved a New Year's resolution in the past? And if so, how did you do it? What were the obstacles? And what helped you become successful in keeping that goal? What are your goals for 2022? What are you trying to do this year? The phone lines are open. You can call us at 651-227-6000. Again, 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. You can also leave me a message on Twitter. I'm at Angela Davis, MPR. As we talk about that support system, letting people know, like, this is what I'm trying to do, and that might help you become more successful because maybe you would get your family members or colleagues to kind of get behind you in what you're trying to do. Does that make sense, Teresa?
It does. And I say be picky about your support system. This is one thing I've learned over almost 20 years of doing this work is sometimes the people who we want to support us are the ones who can't because your change might threaten them and their well-being. So be thoughtful about who you choose as a support system.
What do they call the saboteurs?
Exactly. Are the people we love who are close to us but actually saboteurs. That's a great way to say it, yes.
Oh, go ahead, Teresa.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, and I think really not just being thoughtful, but really I loved Chris's point of finding people who also might mutually want you to be supporting them because there's something so good for us internally about supporting another as we're making our own changes and knowing what that is for you as far as how much connection and support, if you're more introverted, extroverted, how big of a community you need, et cetera. It's just something to consider.
And I yell at, what would you say about a support system? Like letting people around you know, like I'm trying to save money. I'm trying to stop drinking coffee because it makes me sick. Does that make it more likely for you to be able to achieve your goal when you let people around you know that this is something you're working towards?
Yes. So in my research, in my book, I talk about four things that need to happen for goals to be successful. The first is that you need to set it. The second is that you need to monitor progress. You need to get feedback on how well you are doing. The third is that it needs to fit with everything else that you are doing. And the fourth is social support. Social support is critical. Where we see people sometimes make a mistake is by choosing role models that are not necessarily the people that want them to do well as much as the people that do well for themselves. Okay, watching an athlete on television is not going to get me to exercise. Okay, it's my spouse who expects me to get up early in the morning and exercise with him that makes me do that. And so, yes, you need to tell people, you need to find the people that are supportive. So I love the point about don't necessarily seek support from the person that you don't think will support you. And then think about your role models in terms of the people that want you to do well. Okay, it's like your parents want you to do well in college, even though they themselves might mm-hmm. not be in college right now, obviously. It's like the people that want you to do well are the people that should know about your goal and will encourage you to stick to it.
But Ayala, let's speak more to that. Like, why would some people, I mean, if someone close to you is trying to do something that's important to them, they're really working hard to achieve a goal, why would someone get some satisfaction out of seeing them fail?
So there are some interesting dynamics that go on when people pursue either a joint goal. Okay, so that, like, let's say as a household, we have a goal to save together, or an individual goal. So I want to be healthier, and I am doing it in the company of other people that want to be healthier. And the way we sometimes pursue these goals is such that the more you do, the less I do. Okay, so it might be that, you are the person in our small circle who's known to care a lot about exercising. So you exercise a lot and I don't. Okay. In a household, there was really interesting research showing that the more one person is committed to managing the financial stuff, the more one person is getting the expertise about how to manage the finance for the household, the less their spouse knows what's going on. And these are dangerous dynamics, because you get one person that is really becoming the expert while the other person is becoming less and less knowledgeable and doing less because they are with a person who took that on. The best role model, the person that will motivate you, is the person that wants you to learn about how to manage your finance, that wants you to be healthy, to study, to do what you need to do, not the one that is impresses you with how well they are doing or that is willing to do the work instead of you.
We're talking about the psychology of sticking to goals. And I want to know if you've been successful in maintaining a New Year's resolution, and how'd you do that? What are your goals for 2022? Maybe we can help you with some advice on how to get there, a plan. Give us a call at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. I want to hear your stories. Let's talk to one of our listeners now in Eagan. Linda's on the phone. Good morning and Happy New Year, Linda.
Good morning. How are you today? Ooh. I was just driving from the gym today. My New Year's resolution is to manage my new vegan lifestyle and help my friends get healthy and fit. I just turned 63. I ran, I had a marathon on my bucket list for 2020. I did that. And so now I'm training for a triathlon. So I just want to say that you have to make your fitness intentional. You have to schedule it in your day or it will not get done. So I just tell all of my friends, if you don't make the time, you won't have the time. It has to be intentional. So I'm just so excited I got through. And so my New Year's resolution again is to lose 10 pounds mm-hmm. and to manage my new vegan lifestyle. So
right.
And encourage my friends.
Linda, stay on the line with us because I want your New Year energy, Linda. It is contagious. And congratulations on achieving your goal of running a marathon. And what are the challenges with, maintaining your becoming a vegan and maintaining that eating lifestyle, Linda? What makes that hard and easy?
Yeah, one of the things is there's myths that you have to eat all this protein. Mm-hmm. And so you really don't need a lot of protein in order to be a vegan and to be lean and mean and fit. So, and I have on my bucket list to do a fitness competition. So mainly trying to change my mindset as far as I've been on several plans and fitness plans as well, and they tell you you need to eat all this meat and all this protein. You don't need that. So just sticking with my vegetables and my beans and my lentils and, you know, non-dairy milks, coconut milk, almond milk, things of that nature, and my nuts. So that's one of the hardest things is just switching my mindset and not listening to all these people that are saying you need all this protein because you really don't. And you can get protein from vegetables as well and beans and lentils.
And Linda,
so that's one of the major challenges.
You mentioned your friends. Why is it important to you that your friends, that you're supportive of them and that you know, you want to pull them into your fitness interest as well?
Well, because I want them to be around. I'm African-American, and I know, and just American in general, the world in general, we are massively obese. And so I want them to be around. I want them to realize that just because you get older does not mean you have to be out of shape and unhealthy. You don't have to be on all these medicines. And I talk to them, I encourage them, and they always say, I need to be a personal trainer because I'm an encourager, and I want them to be there with me. I want them to be around. I want them to know that you don't have to live with pain. You don't have to have knee surgery. You need to get the weight off of your bones because your body is not designed to carry all that weight. So that's why I want my friends to be around. That's why I encourage them.
Well, Linda, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your stories. Happy New Year. We're proud of you, and I'm again, your voice, your story, it's contagious, isn't it, Teresa? It's contagious. I mean, as we talk about like the people who we surround ourselves with.
Yeah, absolutely. I want her to be my support system, don't you?
No, Linda's going to be my new friend.
Energy.
You can't have her, Teresa. She's my new friend for the new year. But no, what do you hear in her story?
Yeah, what I hear in her story, well, A, it sounds like she started small, right? Like she started with a marathon and she kept taking the action and followed through. And then now she has a bigger goal and dream for herself, as well as it sounds like there's an internal passion, which I think is something that we can all tap into, is this like desire for the people she loves to be healthy and well, which fuels her to be a great role model. And so sometimes we can use our love of others to fuel our passions and our desires for our own life and our own goals.
Ayala, we were talking about saboteurs a few minutes ago, and then Linda called in. She's the opposite of that. What did you hear in Linda's story?
Well, the first thing that I heard was the excitement, right? That was contagious. Someone so excited to do that. Someone who is fantasizing about that amazing vegan food that she's going to eat. Okay. Mm-hmm. One thing that I noted, which is a predictor of success, is that she thought about her goals in terms of do, not in terms of do not. Okay. Even though she could just as well talk about not eating meat, okay, or not eating certain foods, she was talking about the foods that she will be eating and the coconut milk and the thing that she's excited to try and to incorporate more into her menu. And here's the thing. Avoidance goals, do not goals are extremely hard. Okay, this goes all the way back to research by Daniel Wagner. Back in the 80s, he asked people not to think about white bears, okay? Asking someone not to think about white bears, everybody's thinking about white bears, right? It's like, don't think about your ex. Well, of course you're thinking about your ex now. And approach goals, okay, thinking about the lentils and the coconut milk and everything that she had, the running, everything that she would do, is predictor of success. Mm.
And Chris, Linda and Egan, I want to get a shirt made. Be like Linda.
Well, I mean, what a good friend. And I think she's a classic example of she will support her friends in what it is they would like to do, what they would like to accomplish. And of course, she's giving them this wonderful vision of a healthier life. But the other thing I thought about, Angela, always talking is, okay, let's say someone listens, says, okay, I want to become a vegan. And
how you said that, Chris. No, you say, I want to become a vegan.
Right. Or, you know, I want to run a marathon. What aren't you going to do? Because one of the problems that happens with a lot of resolutions, I think, is we add them on top of everything else that we're doing, which is why you get overwhelmed. And so if you're going to be starting or running a marathon and training for a marathon, that's going to take time, and that could be a wonderful thing. But what is it that you're not going to do? What is it that you're going to substitute this activity for so you don't become overwhelmed? And then after, you know, couple of weeks of trying, you just say, oh, I just can't do this. Mm-hmm. So I loved her enthusiasm. I think she's exactly what you want in a supportive community. But I did think with these goals that she has and this positive vision that Ayelet's talking about, it's also thinking about what it is that I don't want to do anymore because I want to fill it, my time, with something else.
Well, we can apply this to money and saving money, right?
Absolutely.
Why are we saving money? Because we want to take a vacation or we want to pay off a debt. Right?
Yes.
And get excited about what the goal will help you achieve.
So I think one of the powerful things you can do, and, you know, it sounds cheesy, you know, you take a photograph from a magazine, you put it on the refrigerator, you look at it, whatever it is. It's your vacation, just as you mentioned. It's, you know, owning our own home. You know, whatever it is the goal, put that on the refrigerator. And then again, talk to your friends. And also, again, I do think it is so important. You want a reciprocal community. Talk to your friends about what you're trying to do, but find out what it is they want to do with their money. And then you can support each other taking these small steps.
All right. We have to take a news break right now, but we've got some listeners on hold. Please stay with us because I want to take your phone calls. I want to hear your stories. We're talking about the psychology of sticking to goals. And I want to hear your stories. Have you achieved a New Year's resolution? How did you do it? What were the obstacles? What helped you get it done? What are you looking to do in 2022? Give us a call at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828 as we talk with guests who can give you some advice. Let's go back to the phones and talk to Annie, who's been on hold and waiting patiently. Thank you, Annie, and Happy New Year. What's going on?
Oh, you're welcome. Happy New Year to all of you as well. Okay, so I have a glorious part of the story and then not so glamorous, just so you know.
Okay.
You've been forewarned. Well, that sounds serious. It's not. Okay, I quit smoking January 1st of 2000, and that was important to me. I kept that for 18 years.
Wonderful.
Thank you. That 1100 was super important to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I went through a divorce, so I started smoking again in 2018. And I'm still smoking.
Mm-hmm.
So I quit smoking on January 1st, but then I started smoking. So then I quit again yesterday, and I'm driving to work trying not to buy a pack.
All right, so this is happening right now. Right,
you want
to quit smoking because what were the benefits when you quit successfully, Annie? How did you feel?
Oh, it was great. The health benefits. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a handout from my primary doctor up on the wall about all the first 100 days and the benefits and mm-hmm. the money I spent on other things, and you know, I mean, they're nonstop, the benefits.
And what you said, you mentioned the divorce, but what else was going on that made you go back to smoking a couple of years ago?
Oh, gosh, it was the stress and, yeah.
Understandable.
The stress.
Right.
And how good it feels to just breathe in and out slowly,
mm-hmm.
you know?
All right, well, let's talk, you know, I yell at you're a professor of behavioral science. What would you suggest Annie do to get her back on track? I mean, she successfully quit smoking for many years.
I would start with asking Annie, what would she advise someone in her situation? Can she answer that before I say further?
Annie, what would you advise someone else to do?
It'd be good if I wasn't not knowing what to say right now.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. She sort of stomped there.
Yeah. Annie, think about that. Because what I'm hearing from the story is actually a success story.
Okay? Like you've
done it very well in the past. What I also know, we collected data from hundreds of people that were struggling with something, okay? Some were struggling with studying, some were struggling with getting a job, some were struggling with anger management. And right. What we did with each of them is asking them, what would you advise another person that suffers from a similar problem? And we were amazed by how much people knew and then how motivated they are by telling us what they did. Now, what I really like about Annie just say, oh, I don't know, is that many of them started just like this. So the typical person in our studies was saying, why would you ask me? I am obviously not doing it very well. And like my response were, well, you know, you obviously the person that has been struggling with this for years, what worked well for you in the past? And when I hear someone who was successful in the past, now I can give you many tips. I wrote a book about that, but you were successful. So tell me what worked before and let's start there.
Wow. Teresa, what would you say to Annie? What suggestion would you give her to help her quit smoking again?
Yeah, Annie, as I was listening as well, beyond what was just said, I was really struck by the stress component. And often, mm-hmm. especially with smoking, that's a common issue for setback. And it really becomes about, of course, in our program and in my mindset, some of that mindfulness and stress management is an undercurrent. And if we don't have good ways to direct our mind and calm our body and nervous system, we will reach for something to do that soothing and calming for us as a knee-jerk reaction. And that makes it really hard to overcome habits that are driven by stress. So I'm sitting and thinking about just what are some of those mindfulness or stress management techniques that might support you that you could start practicing as you're navigating this journey.
You know, Annie, you mentioned breathing in and out, that's what part of what you enjoy about smoking, but you can breathe in and out slowly without smoking.
And I've been meditating for 30 years. So, I mean, I do have many tools in my toolbox. So,
all right.
I mean, as I listen to you guys more, I do have the skills. So I need to dust them off.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, anything you want to suggest to Annie?
You know, here I just enlist your friends. You feel like smoking, call them up, talk to them, say, hey, I feel like smoking. And they'll help you walk through it, talk you through it, help you not smoke. So again, I would enlist my friends because they'd like you not to smoke.
And again, Annie, to repeat, you know, what they said earlier too, I hear a success story,
yeah.
You know, even though you've had the setback, you went nearly 20 years with not smoking and remembering that was a huge accomplishment and you can do it again. Thank you, Annie, for calling in and sharing your story. I'm sure there are many people who are struggling with smoking as well. Let's take another phone call. In St. Paul, we have Paul on the line. Paul, what did you share with us? What do you want to share with us?
Yeah, thank you. Good morning. First of all, I love so many of the strategies and the tactics that your guests have come up with. I think they can be really helpful. And I also love the direction that the conversation was going a little while ago of moving towards something that you want rather than away from something you don't want. I work as a life coach myself, and sometimes the idea of motivation often is something we're trying to avoid. And rather than an inspired vision, which I think one of your guests talked about too. What's the compelling vision that you have that's pulling you in the direction that you want to go? And when we have that compelling vision and make a conscious connection to a value that we have, that I find with my clients is a really powerful way to help them move towards their goals. One of the goals for me that I had not so long ago was to become gluten-free. And I realized that if I was thinking of myself as trying to become gluten-free, then I was always having to say no to things with gluten. Rather than if I simply saw myself as someone who was gluten-free, I identified myself as that, then there wasn't the question. I didn't need to worry about it. I just say no. So that's just kind of what I wanted to offer, is the idea of moving towards something, connecting it with our values, and also realizing that sometimes the way in which we identify ourselves can help or hurt.
That mindset can be very powerful.
Yes.
Wow. All right. Thank you. That's Paul in St. Paul. As we talk about New Year's resolutions and we're looking at the psychology of actually sticking to those goals and acknowledging it's hard. And so we talked about setbacks. We heard about setbacks. Teresa, what about rewards? Can we reward ourselves if we do something well, if we stay on track? Is there a way to create a reward system that would help us stay motivated as we get into June, July?
Yeah, absolutely. I think rewards are one of the often overlooked gems. And there's two things people do that don't work in the reward category. And the first is to obviously reward ourselves with the very thing we're trying to avoid, right? Like, oh, if I'm trying to change my diet, okay, my reward's going to be a piece of chocolate. Well, wait a minute. That's not going to support you long term. So being mindful or thoughtful about the type of reward. But the second thing is then sometimes people don't tie their reward into what they're wanting to create. And so one of the examples, I'm going back to diet because it's such an easy, often used one. Let's say you really want to change your diet, and what would help you with your diet to make it easier is to have a Nutribullet or something that would help you make smoothies in a hurry in the morning so you have a quick to go breakfast. Mm-hmm. Make that a reward so that if you stick with something a few weeks, you buy your Nutribullet, and it just helps with the propelling forward of what you're already working on. So that's what I would say about rewards. I think there are huge ways to celebrate the milestones. It takes a lot of milestones to reach our bigger goal.
And Ayelet, what about you? Are rewards a smart way to keep ourselves motivated?
Rewards are definitely part of our toolbox. The problem with rewarding, and we do use rewards and people use them quite effectively, but and the but is that rewards work best when they are a bit uncertain. Okay, and we know that for many years. Like, if you are not quite sure how much you will get or whether you will get the reward, that works the best. And when you're rewarding yourself, creating this uncertainty, creating this excitement about the reward is a bit hard. And so I often talk about, rewarding yourself is a bit like tickling yourself. Okay, it's not quite the same tickle or massaging yourself. You can do that, but it probably not the first thing that I would do. Saying that, I definitely find myself going and buying a way too expensive tea because I just finished something important at work. So rewards could trip these things. They are effective.
They could trip us up, rewards. Chris, what do you think about that? I saved a lot of money, so now I'm going to spend some.
Exactly. You know, one of the things is there is this theory about, well, you set up a financial penalty system, and if you don't stick to your resolutions, you're going to pay a financial penalty, perhaps to a charity or a neighbor or a friend. And I don't think that monetary rewards work very well, except there's some people, yes, they're very responsive to that, but I think most people don't. The thing that I sort of liked with rewards, it's not quite rewards, but what Paul was saying about how you frame something, with inspiration. So
I am gluten free, not I am becoming gluten free.
Right.
Just do it.
So we talk a lot about, well, you need emergency savings because bad things happen. Mm-hmm. But you can reframe that and say, if I have savings, that's my opportunity fund. I can quit my job. I can go get some additional education. I can take a vacation. So your savings is your opportunity fund. And what you're rewarding yourself is that you're doing activities that enhance the quality of your life. Now, it also turns out that your opportunity fund can be your emergency savings if your car breaks down or in the middle of the winter, the boiler has problems. But I think the framing it as an opportunity and rewarding yourself by savings, I think that's a much more positive way to approach something that we all struggle to do.
Let's take more phone calls. In Zimmerman, we have Paul calling in. Good morning, Paul, and Happy New Year.
Good morning.
Hi. What do you want to share with us about goals and how to stick to those goals?
Well, I was listening to Anne a few minutes ago talking about smoking after 20 years of quitting. And she brought up stressors in her life, such as her divorce, but I don't think we...
I'm sorry, Paul, could you speak a little louder, Paul, so I can hear you better?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Can you hear me better now?
Sure, you speak a little louder. Yeah, that's better. Go ahead.
Okay, so I was listening to Anne talk about smoking, quitting for 20 years, coming back to it after stressors in her life, like divorce, but we never touched on
you know, the worldwide stressors of, you know, global pandemic, politics, all the other things that are happening lately that really can push people to go back to their, you know, self-medication or whatever right. makes them feel good. So I thought it was worth mentioning. So I called in because you guys didn't talk about those external stress factors that happen around you, not just the divorce and what is happening in your life and how you cope with those. And I experienced a head injury about 7 months ago, which took me out of work. And in this growth process that I'm learning about my emotional control and how to deal with stressors, like currently right now I'm driving to physical therapy. I have occupational therapy and emotional behavioral therapy. And something we're working on is how I react to things that stress me out. It could be my kids or external things. But one thing that I found that's worked for me is really perspective and just being rubber, right? Letting all those things bounce off of you. It's like the lesson you learn, you're taught when you're a child. If you can't control it, don't worry about it. You know, the things you can control, have a good perspective on them and try to make positive things in your life. And the things you can't control, like COVID or who the president is or how you feel about that or external things, your divorce, like opportunities. They're all opportunities to change into a better version of yourself. And if you let them stress you out, they're just going to bring you back to, you know, your infancy or where you cope with things. So, I don't know. I've learned in the last 7 months is my mind and the way I frame things and the things I let get through to me that bother me versus the things I keep on the outside, it makes a big difference.
Right. Paul, thank you for calling in. Be careful driving there. We wish you a speedy recovery from your head injury. And thank you for calling and sharing. We know 2021 was a huge learning year for many of us, particularly how to deal with stress. And Ayelet, what would you say about that? Because we know 2022 is going to bring still those challenges of living through a pandemic.
It has been a difficult year for many people. What I just heard in the previous story and I really liked is starting from a place of saying, this is the problem, this is the goal, and this is the problem that I'm trying to resolve. And this is actually where we started this hour, by whether it's a good idea to set goals in the first place. And one thing that you do when you set a goal, and that was just a wonderful example of this, is realizing that I suffer, that this is hard for me, that I'm stressed out, that I'm angry. Okay? For these type of goals, often a lot of the work is just saying, I have a problem. Okay? It's not just that the world is really hard, is that the way I respond to the world is unhealthy for me. And this recognition saying, I am going to change that, is already a huge step toward the change. So,
and we've got to learn to all have a goal of learning to be kind and patient with ourselves in this new year. All right. Well, our time is up for now, but I want to thank our guests again. We've been talking to Ayelet Fishbuck, a professor of behavioral science there at the University of Chicago, as well as Teresa Nutt, part of the graduate faculty at the University of Minnesota's Integrative Health and Wellbeing Coaching Program, and our colleague Chris Farrell, our senior economics contributor here at NPR News. Thank you to our listeners, too, for sharing your stories, and we're wishing everybody a safe and peaceful 2022. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning at 9. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.